Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Joining us now is Pete Daniel, retired curator and historian at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History and author of Deep and As They Come, the 1927 Mississippi Flood. Pete, good morning.
Good morning.
Boy, we've got history repeating itself this morning. Worst flooding along the Mississippi in decades. 8 states have evacuated residents. Levees have been blown up or breached. Any chance that the water this time will exceed that 1927 2.5 million cubic feet per second rate?
I would say so. I mean, nature has a way of taking vengeance on human beings' efforts to control it. And in 1927, just to give some statistics so the listeners will know, there were 16.5 million acres flooded.
Wow.
In 7 states. Over $100 million in crop losses, 162,000 homes flooded, and on. I mean, but the main thing was that people had nowhere to go. As today, you have to have relief centers. So the Red Cross set up 154 camps for people, and there were 325,000 people basically in tent camps that the Red Cross set up.
And this is the Red Cross, no FEMA, no federal disaster emergency preparedness infrastructure, right?
Well, it's not quite that simple, because the Secretary of Commerce at the time was Herbert Hoover. He was a great organizer, and he brought in the departments of War, Navy, Treasury, Agriculture, and Commerce, and also he helped coordinate the Red Cross efforts, the U.S. Public Health Service, and then the Rockefeller Foundation and other groups came in to help. So it was a massive aid effort coordinated by the Secretary of Commerce, Herbert Hoover.
And it really made his political career back then in 1927. But how did that flood change America for good, Pete Daniel?
Well, that's a tough question, because it did wake up people to the lack of flood control, or sophisticated flood control, because if you have levees only, when the levees go, it's all over. And that's why they had that spillway up in Cairo when they blew the levee up there.
Sure.
To relieve the pressure. So they may have learned that, because they blew up the levee south of New Orleans in 1927 to save New Orleans. And that was not part of a flood plan. It was a Plaquemines Parish, and they just told the people they were going to blow up the levee down there and save New Orleans, which they did.
That's amazing. Now, there was also a record flood in 1937.
Right.
And, of course, there was the huge flood in 1993, and you can go online and see comparisons of all these floods and some astounding film footage of those raging waters in 1927. How would you compare all of these floods looking at what's happened today?
Well, I'm not really an expert on those others. They all have a special thing, because they happen in different times. For example, in 1927, that was the year that Babe Ruth set his home run record, that Lindbergh flew the Atlantic, that talking movies appeared. So you kind of place it technologically then. There were newsreels, like you mentioned, of moving footage of the flood. There were lots of photographs when I was working on this book. Almost every family that was old enough to witness the flood had photographs, and some of them took the photographs. I met 2 people in particular who were young at the time and were out taking photographs. So the good probably comes out of a more sophisticated flood control plan, although it may not be quite enough, as we're finding out now.
Is it possible that in 1993, when the river flooded enormously, it was only about 1 million cubic feet per second of volume in 1993? Do you think the lesson from that flood was, okay, the levees pretty much hold, we've got this system under control, and that's really being tested in the waters today?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be tested. And those levees are vulnerable, because over the years, rodents get in there and dig holes and so forth. They're little tunnels within the levees, and they can get water-soaked and be extremely vulnerable. And, of course, the Corps of Engineers knows that, but it's just a chance. You know, it may hold and it may not.
You know, and geologically, and I know you're not a geologist, so I don't want to drag you off into the Ice Age here. But, if you look at that drainage system for the Mississippi, I mean, it's just the narrow channel left over from what once was a giant sea. And if you see the floodwaters laid over in 1927 and 37, even in 93, you really see evidence of that sea that was there for millions of years.
Yeah, and even after the sea became a channel, every spring there would be an overflow. And it was a natural thing. In the Mississippi Delta, for example, that very fertile area, it was that soil coming down from higher up in the country that would precipitate out as the flood covered all that land, that swamp land. And that's why it's so rich today. I mean, the topsoil goes down for a lot of feet. It's very rich. And that's because of the annual floods.
We're speaking with Pete Daniel, a retired curator and historian from the Smithsonian Institution of American History and author of Deepen As It Comes, the 1927 Mississippi Flood. And I'm wondering, Pete, we were talking to people from the area earlier today, and they were saying that the damage today could be worse than it was in 1927 and 1937 because there have been so many new developments, a $75 million new waterfront in one place in Mississippi, and so many homes built along the river. And I'm wondering if that to you means that in some ways we haven't learned the lessons from the historic floods of the past.
I don't think we've learned the lessons that nature can teach us, and one of them is hubris. In 1927, the Corps of Engineers claimed they could hold all the water in sight, and 2 weeks later there were crevasses, is what they call the breaks in the levees, all up and down the river. So you have to – nature can humble you, as we found out in Japan and we find out with earthquakes and tsunamis and all that. Nature is extremely powerful.
And it's certainly likely that, you know, as you were saying, a generation from now, the topsoil that was deposited in this flood may benefit the nation in an agricultural bounty that we can't even imagine, right?
It could, although what happened in Mississippi happened over millions of years, and we're talking about 1 year. I don't think we'll get a real rich deposit of we'll get more of a deposit of refuse and plastics and
right.
Stuff like that, I think.
But an ancient rhythm of Mother Nature in all of these floods. Pete Daniel, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.